It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Pound for Pound. I am your host, Andrew Crenary, alongside this week, Mahdi Dembele and Riley Lucas. Guys, UFC 295 officially in the books. It was an amazing event. In the Big Apple at MSG. It was a great event from head to toe, some great main event fights all throughout the main card. Also was amazing. The prelims were good, early prelims, everything about this card. I was loving it. Also partly because I was there covering it live. So it was definitely a really, really fun event. But first, how are you guys doing?
I mean, I'm great because it was an Alex Pereira win and I've been waiting for that. So I'm very happy.
I got to tell you, this card, I can't think back to another card where there was so many just knockouts from top to bottom. I mean, everybody was getting their heads kicked in and knocked off. So I got to say, this was a very, very good card. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I was actually texting our this week's producer, Zach Cordova, during the fight night, and we were just kind of talking about it. And I was saying to him, I think this is probably the best card I've seen since the Gaethje-Poirier 2 card, which was a while ago. That was back in Salt Lake City. And that had a ton of knockouts. But for this card, this UFC 295 main card, 5 fights, 5 finishes. I mean, you really can't get much better than that.
And you experienced it in person, right, Andrew?
Yeah. No, I was there live tweeting the entire event. It was so cool, able to see some of my favorite fighters in person, able to live tweet the event, cover it. And it was really, really fun. I was able to get down into the media center, also hear some fighter interviews firsthand. So, some really fun stuff. But jumping right into this main card, I really can't just wait talking about this any longer. I just really want to get your guys' takes on all these fights. But jumping right into this, I want to talk about the first fight on that main card, which was a featherweight matchup between Diego Lopez and Pat Sabatini. And what a start to a main card. Diego Lopez goes out there in the first round, 1:30 in, and pretty much just knocks out Pat Sabatini. It was a nice right hand, putting him on the ground, followed up with some nice ground and pound. Just what a start to this main card. Diego Lopez also is increasing that hype train that he's just been kind of slowly building up from that short nose replacement fight, which was his UFC debut, I believe like around a year ago, maybe a half year ago. But this guy is just a scary guy at the featherweight division. He's a finisher. And I just wanted your guys' takes on this fight and how it started the main card for you guys.
Well, I just think it was crazy how it really started the trend for this card, because there was a lot of early finishes just moving forward, a lot of round one finishes, which I thought was, I mean, I love to see it. It was exciting, but it was definitely a great start to this card.
I mean, when you talk about the smaller guys, usually when you think of a featherweight fight, you think of a lot of action, you think of a lot of punches thrown. I mean, Diego Lopez, he looks like a character to me, almost like the hair with the tattoos. It doesn't match who he is. We were talking about this yesterday with Zach, Andrew. But I mean, he's a spark plug. And you see him calling out Bryce Mitchell after the fight. I mean, he could be a star in his very own right, in one of the better divisions. He's the guy that could be really at the top of it. And the way he just smashed Pat in that, like he knocks him to the ground and then he just mauls him afterwards to finish the fight. I mean, that has star written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, to go from giving Mostar Ivalev, an undefeated guy, like his probably toughest fight in the UFC to date, and then losing that fight, going out, getting a big finish in his next fight, and then coming to MSG and finishing. What's up?
No.
Oh, so sorry. But anyway, to go into MSG and then just get this first round knockout, I mean, incredibly impressive stuff. And also, I mean, you do mention his hair, Mahdi. He is a bit of a goofy guy. He definitely has like kind of the Karen haircut. I don't even know how else to describe it. He also has some really bad tattoos, but I feel like that's kind of common for UFC fighters.
Does it
But
match?
yeah, but despite that, I mean, he is such an intriguing guy at that featherweight division. I love that Bryce Hall match or Bryce Mitchell matchup. I think that would be a great fight to schedule, especially considering Bryce Mitchell just had his comeback fight against Dan Ige. But yeah, just really, really impressive stuff all around. I guess one last question is, do you guys like that Bryce Mitchell matchup?
Yeah, I do. That like you saying that, like I honestly wasn't even processing that until this point, but I could see it and I like it.
I mean, Bryce Mitchell's an exciting fighter. I mean, you see him going back with, I believe it was him going back and forth with Ilia Topuria. If I'm not mistaken, going back on social media and the third strike, I believe that was Bryce Mitchell. But Bryce Mitchell's as tough as they come. I think this would be a very, very good litmus test, especially for someone like Diego Lopez looking to make a name. And to me, Bryce Mitchell's almost like a gatekeeper. So perhaps I that's a matchup. It's going to be fun. That'll be a fun matchup there.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't on the pod last week, but out of curiosity, who were you guys pulling for?
I believe I was pulling for Diego Lopez. I definitely got to go back and watch, but I've never been a big Pat Sabatini like fan. So I kind of went into this thinking that he was gonna have a big performance, Lopez was. But I didn't think it was gonna be this emphatic.
Yeah, I was very, and it's funny you say the hair thing because that's always where I look at him. I'm like, I don't think I could pull for this guy. I can't take him serious with this haircut.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But
One
he's
last
really
thing I do
asserting
want
his
to,
dominance.
yeah, one last thing I do want to mention with this fight. Fun little fact: I was actually checking my live tweets after the event on Sunday, and I definitely was tired waking up a little bit later. I definitely slept a little bit in, and I looked at my phone and I saw Diego Lopez liked my tweet about him getting his first round finish. And I was like, "There's no way this is the actual Diego Lopez." I click on my Twitter, I click on the actual account. It turns out that it was actually him that liked the tweet. Yeah, a
Holy.
little bit of a subtle flex, but more importantly, I think that maybe we have a friend of pound for pound now in the
Fine.
UFC.
That
I
is
love it.
clever.
Add him to the list. We're on the
Yeah,
come
no,
up.
definitely add him to the list. I'm maybe a bit better than Dylan Danis. Jury's
Yeah.
still out with that
Yeah,
one. At least
exactly.
maybe a little bit more legit of a fighter, but.
A little more positivity behind this one too. I don't think Dylan Danis was here for nice reasons.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, moving on into the second fight of this main card. Matt Frivola gets absolutely steamrolled by Benoit Saint-Denis, which is pretty ironic considering Matt Frivola's nickname is the Steamroller. It was just a really, really, I mean, like going into this fight, I thought that Matt Frivola was really going to push the pace considering he is a New York guy. He always has that energy about him where he just wants to make it a fun fight for the fans. And I'm not going to deny, it definitely was a fun fight for the fans. He really pushed the pressure, pushed the pace. But Benoit Saint-Denis, he's a scary guy. He looked amazing throughout this entire fight, whether it was in clinch scenarios, just stand up. He looked always a step ahead. And just leading up to that head kick knockout where Matt Frivola was kind of like sidestepping alongside the cage. And then Benoit Saint-Denis just perfectly times this head kick as he's moving out of range and just completely starches him. Such an
Yeah.
impressive finish.
Yeah.
And Benoit Saint-Denis was calling out some big names after this. He was like, I want to fight a guy like Justin Gaethje, which is a little crazy to me, but I don't know
Love
if he's
it.
ready for that. You like
I
it?
do
Okay.
love it. I like it.
Yeah, I love it. I love to hear it. And even more so, I think too, this Matt Frivola we saw in this ring, I really think that he was in some of the best form he's ever been in his career entering, Madison Square Garden on Saturday. And not to mention he's coming off what is it, three first round stoppages? That what it,
Wow.
like I think that that was a good Matt Frivola to face off with, and the fact that he was able to do that so almost, I don't want to say effortlessly, but what was it, round one, like you said, Andrew?
Yeah, round one, a minute and 30 in, it was emphatic.
Yeah, so I think that speaks a lot about his talent because that Matt Frivola that we saw wasn't, no scrub. He's in
Yeah.
great shape. He's in a good point in his career. So I say let's see it.
I mean, who said the French couldn't fight? Benoit Saint-Denis, he's a very, very robust fighter.
I probably said
He's
that, to be honest.
the judo, I know he was in the French special forces as well. His jiu-jitsu, he has an improved striking game. He had a really, really good fight against Gabriel Miranda. And then I believe he's coming off that fight against Bonfim where he handled him. But I think the only question that there was to be asked about Benoit Saint-Denis was the cardio going down, because he is known to push it very, very early in the fight. And he was able to stop it quick. I mean, there's been no questions about his striking ability as it's improved over the years. So he deserves the win. I mean, he's on the cusp in that lightweight division. He's really, really good.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think a Gaethje fight, I mean, that would be such a big fight for him. And if he's able to win that fight, I mean, it would propel him to just superstardom in the lightweight division. But going back to that three fight win streak that Riley mentioned, that Matt Frivola had, the most notable of that was Drew Dober, who I'm a huge Drew Dober fan. It really surprised me that I was able to go out there and just finish him and really negate the striking ability. So I was really coming into this fight really high on Matt Frivola. Like, again, Riley said, I felt like this was probably the best version that we've seen of him thus far. But man, Benoit Saint-Denis, I mean, he just put the division on notice. It was really, really impressive finish. So yeah, just really impressive stuff. I don't know if you guys have any last takes on this fight, other potential matchups that you maybe want to put into the ring other than that Gaethje matchup. I could also maybe see
Same
a
thing.
Dustin Poirier, possibly. I know he really wants that Gaethje rematch, especially
I
since he
feel
was getting knocked out, but
I like the Gaethje, I think it, because it is crazy, and I think he is crazy, and let's give crazy crazy, and let's see what he can do. Because I honestly, I wasn't on the pod last week, so I thank goodness, because I would have not, picked this fight in his favor.
I don't know about, I like
I really would have picked Matt Frivola, I'm not gonna lie, just because
it.
of where he's at. I just feel like he's in a good spot, and he's ranked, or he has a higher rank, and now he's not going to probably after this, or I haven't checked, but he probably doesn't. And I just think that this speaks a lot for him. I would have never thought a French man could get out there and do that. So let's just give him what he wants and see it.
I mean, sure, that works, but I mean, the lightweight division, again, it's so stacked. There's a bunch of guys. Even a fight with Bobby Green, who's currently like ranked lower than him, that would be awesome, because Bobby Green just pulls wins like from behind his ear, wins that you wouldn't expect. I
Oh
would say maybe a guy like Michael Chandler or Beneil Dariush, just guys who are like fireworks. Michael Chandler is a guy that he opens fights very, very well. I've seen in the past that he hasn't been able to close fights particularly well, and I think that's kind of the same problem with Benoit Saint-Denis. It would be interesting to see them in a fight together. I would like to see Michael Chandler and Benoit Saint-Denis in a cage together. I think that would be good.
yeah. It's an interesting matchup. I like that one. I know Michael
Yeah.
Chandler is like steadfast holding out on fighting until he gets that Conor
I
McGregor matchup, if
know.
that's even happening, but we'll see. I mean, that's an interesting fight. I like that one also. But to kind of put a stake in this fight, Benoit Saint-Denis now ranked number 11 in the lightweight division. Matt Frivola gets bumped off of the rankings completely. And now, actually, funnily enough, Drew Dober's ranked 15 ahead of Matt Frivola. So interesting stuff there. But yeah, Matt Frivola definitely has to go back to the drawing board with that one. Definitely not the homecoming that he was looking for, but man, Benoit Saint-Denis, what a guy. Moving on, though, we have one of the only women's fights of the entire UFC 295 card, and man, it also delivered as well. It was Jessica Andrade versus Mackenzie Dern, a quintessential real striker versus grappler matchup. Jessica Andrade is known for having her one-hit KO power. And Mackenzie Dern is known for, once it gets to the ground, it is extremely dangerous. Anywhere you go, you're at threat of being submitted. But the way that this fight played out, man, it was so one-sided. I don't know if you guys watched this fight in real time, but watching it in the arena itself, man, it just looked like Mackenzie Dern did not have a chance. Jessica Andrade, I believe, dropped her four times throughout the fight. Mackenzie Dern wasn't able to get it to the ground pretty much at all. Instead, really had to rely on her inadequate striking, just to be frank with you guys. And that led to the finish. It was a KO TKO round two, 3 minutes into that second round. So you guys, I just want your general takes on this fight and kind of what the deal is with Mackenzie Dern, because it seemed like she was building up a really nice resume in this strawweight division to become a real title challenger, and now she is just bumped way back down in the division.
Well, to me, that just is what I harp on so much with the BJJ. Like,
Oh, I
I
totally
know
forgot. You are going to have such a take with
I'm gonna
this.
have a field day with this. Like, I feel like a broken record just constantly saying this over and over, but that's the problem. It's like these BJJ guys who are so well versed in that subdivision are just, it's not going to ever work. Or it does sometimes, but they're good on their feet, right? But you have to get them to their feet. So when you're going up against someone who's an amazing striker like Jessica, it's just a matter of the fact that you're not going to win that. Because if you can only win a fight on your on the floor, but it starts on your feet, like how is that gonna work? I just, that's the one thing I could talk about this forever and ever, and that's why I'm not going deep into it now because I have talked about this. But it's just crazy to me that we're still having this debate on, you know, BJJ guys ruling the world. You see, hear people like Dylan Danis and all those, yeah, the Gracies just saying that it's still the best fighting style. It's evidently not. And I just can't even listen to it anymore. I can't watch it anymore. Round two finish is crazy. And if you look at the stats, it's just disgusting. Like, I couldn't even watch this fight. I started to watch it in real time, and I was just like, I already know what's gonna happen here. Why am I still watching? Like, we already know where this is gonna go.
Yeah, I'm beginning to become a proponent of the BJJ doesn't work. I mean,
Yeah.
old boxing,
No.
like old fighting logic tells you that anyone can knock out anyone. So obviously, if you have a skill such as BJJ, if you're able to get to that point, you would win. But it doesn't work against high class strikers. I mean, Jessica Andre just picked her apart piece by piece, and the BJJ, it's until she initiates her BJJ, but she didn't, and Jessica Andre just mauled her from there. So yeah, I have nothing to say, but yeah, Riley's right.
Yes, wait, can we clip that
Right.
trap forever? Oh my goodness.
I'm
I was
starting. I've seen too
excited.
many of them.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm gonna make a montage of that. Thank you.
Oh man, Madi, I can't believe you admitted defeat. The
That's
biggest thing.
no,
He's
it's too much. I've seen too much. I've seen it.
not even
Fair.
admitting defeat. He's just joining my team.
All
Wow,
right. Listen.
what an arc, a character arc here. Madi joins Riley. Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Well, listen here. I'm not going to defend Mackenzie Dern because honestly, this performance is indefensible. Like, honestly, it was pretty terrible to be quite honest with you guys. But I think the biggest thing and the reason why you say BJJ isn't a good base for MMA, Riley, is because that when you train only BJJ and you don't really mix in other disciplines, most importantly, wrestling, which can get the fight to the ground. You're never really able to implement your BJJ because, like, as you guys perfectly highlighted, the fight starts standing. So similar with the whole Crone Gracie thing that we talked about a couple months ago, he was never able to really get the fight to the ground just due to his inadequate wrestling. And I think off the back of that, it makes it so that their BJJ, no matter how good it is, it just doesn't play a factor in the fight. And I think that's the biggest problem with BJJ fighters in general, to be quite honest with you. I think it's just the lack of ability to really get the fight into their wheelhouse, which is the ground. But yeah, that's just my take. I believe, yeah, checking the rankings now, Mackenzie Dern lost one of the spots in the strawweight rankings. I believe she's, yep, ranked number 8 now. So definitely a bit of a setback for her, but Jessica Andrade, big bounce back for her because I believe in her last fight she got knocked out by Yao Xianan. So really, really impressive stuff from her. But it was a great, great third to last fight in this main card to set us up for some amazing, amazing title fights. The first of which was our co-main event, which happened from this whole debacle heading into this UFC 295. Pay-per-view, which John Jones originally was supposed to be headlining this fight, had to pull out due to a pectoral muscle tear, and in its place, a interim heavyweight title fight was scheduled between Tom Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich. And I know a lot of people were thinking, "Oh, is this fight going to deliver? It's going to be a fun stylistic matchup." But these guys only really had 2 weeks of notice since John Jones pulled out of the card, and this fight was kind of like quickly put together. But man, did it deliver. It was such a cool fight. Even in the buildup, both of these guys had so much respect for each other, just in terms of their style. I remember Tom Aspinall saying, like, yeah, he's a scary dude. He's a really scary guy. And Sergey Pavlovich talking back, saying, like, no, you're a scary guy. I got to worry about you on the other side of the octagon. So a lot of camaraderie heading into this fight. And yeah, it delivered so much. KO first round. Tom Aspinall is your new heavyweight champion. I don't want to say fully heavyweight champion because John Jones still exists. Big asterisk with that interim belt. But still, he went out there and put on a clinic. I mean, it was such a quick fight. I believe now Tom Aspinall still holds the record for fastest average fight time in the UFC. Just some really, really impressive stuff. And also to go out there and knock out Sergey Pavlovich, a guy that is on a 6-7 fight first round KO streak. It was something that I don't think really anybody was expecting. So I just want your takes on this fight. How was Tom Aspinall's performance? What was your big takeaways from it? And what do you think he adds to the heavyweight division,
I
guys?
mean, if I could take this one, John Jones, I will say this about John Jones. It's one of those things where I just have to see it, right? John Jones may be the greatest UFC fighter of all time, youngest champion. 15 world champions he beat, never loses a fight. Like, John Jones is something that I just have to see from Tom Aspinall. If I'm talking about Tom Aspinall by himself, he is a superstar in the making. I love everything about him. I believe when we recorded last week, we were all in agreement that this guy's going to win the fight. Like, there's just something about him. It was the same way I felt about Gilbert Burns once upon a time, that he just has star written all over him. The speed and the quickness, the combination of two from a guy in the heavyweight division. I don't think you really see that as often. Sure, you got guys like a Bruce and can really put on a punch. He's just so fast, and he knocks out guys fast, and the crowd loves him. And he's just perfect. I love everything about Tom Aspinall. I think he's one of the. I don't know. I think he is on track to be like an all-time great UFC fighter, and not just in the division, but just of all time. He's amazing. I love him. John Jones is. We have to cross that bridge once we get here, but I love his confidence. He's calling out guys and the respect that he displays. He's just class personified. He's just star personified. I love Tom Aspinall. Just love him.
Yeah, wow. as a Russian lover, I don't know how I can come back in.
Yes, this is true. Ha
Well, don't get your full aha because I was not on the pod last week, so maybe I wouldn't have picked. No, I'm kidding.
ha.
I obviously was pulling for Sergey Pavlovich. I think rightfully so. I think most people with common sense were. So I just no. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm getting a little too ahead of myself. But it was just crazy because he landed those punches early, and that, I mean, that obviously got Tom Aspinall's attention. He just started going off with the leg kicks, and that, you know, ultimately worked. But I was very disappointed because I really thought Sergey Pavlovich had this. As I will say, he's not a Dagestani Russian, so I don't know if that
Big copy out there, yeah.
counts against the Russian theory that Russians never lose. But I still have that big last that last big UFC event under my belt, so I'm on my high horse for that still. So I guess I'm fine. But it's just those leg kicks. I mean, it's just crazy. And you know, that one exchange, he was leaving his head stationary, and it just happened. So there's only so much you can say for that, but I'm still a Sergey Pavlovich fan, deep down.
deep down. I mean, and definitely I think that he is still a legitimate contender in this heavyweight division. I mean, he had his UFC debut a couple of years ago, I believe, and that was a loss, KO loss to Alistair Overeem. And most people, I imagine, wrote him off then and said that he probably was just going to be another kind of bland heavyweight before he went on his amazing streak. So I don't have any doubt that he will be back, but it was through and through Tom Aspinall's night. And just the performance that he put in, from getting rocked very early in the fight, where we've seen in the past, Pavlovich, when he gets guys in bad situations, he'll finish them pretty much 100% of the time. I mean, just look at this guy's UFC record. He just needs to land one punch, and then after that, he swarms you, and then he gets you out of there. That same thing happened in this fight against Tom Aspinall. We saw him get hit pretty hard, and instead of freaking out, he used his head movement. He got on his bike. He was able to recover and allowed for him to really land that knockout punch, which is really impressive stuff. But talking to what you were saying, Madi, and how this guy is a superstar, his post-fight interview was amazing. It was so cool him talking to Joe Rogan. It was super inspirational. And we're actually going to put that clip in right now so you guys can hear it.
I'm here with the winner, Tom Aspinall. An incredibly emotional moment for you. An amazing moment for you. What a sensational victory. Tell us, what is going through your mind right now?
Oh, I can't even tell you, Joe. It's been a crazy 2.5 weeks. Oh, my God. I just want to say to everyone at home, listen, if you ever get the chance to do something and you're scared to do it, you should definitely do it, because there's a chance it's going to pay off.
Well, the chance paid off in an absolutely sensational way tonight. What a victory. And doing it the way you did it, to knock out one of the most feared knockout artists in the sport.
He's a big, scary guy. You know, he's a really, really big... I've never been as scared in my life as fighting this guy, but... You know what? I got a lot of power too, and I believe in myself. I really believe in myself. I've worked so hard over the years. And this man right here, my father, has worked harder than anybody, so... This belt is dedicated to my father.
Yeah, so I mean, just an amazing clip, super inspirational stuff. I just want you guys quick takes, I mean, just on what this means for the heavyweight division. I mean, I know, Mahdi, you said that John Jones still waiting in the wings. Maybe a Tom Aspinall versus John Jones fight could possibly happen. But just really, really impressive stuff. I just want your guys' takes on kind of what he does for this heavyweight division.
What I will say is this: the heavyweight division has been devoid of like that one true guy. Like, I know we had the Stipe and now we got the John Jones era, but it's gone through a little bit. Maybe Curtis Blaydes was that guy. He's the best wrestler, but he blew his chance some time ago. We talked about that on the pod, how it was a boring fight. And there were other guys in there. Tied to Ivas is not the same anymore. And there were guys up in the... I think he solidifies it. He brings attention back to a heavyweight division, which usually is the... This is not boxing, where it's like the heavyweight championship of the world. In the UFC, we look towards the smaller guys. We look towards lightweight and bantamweight and featherweight. A lot of punches thrown. Those are the fun divisions. Heavyweight, you don't typically look for that. And especially with Ngannou leaving and others leaving and the heavyweight, I think he just brings it back. He's a superstar. He's someone that they could look to and be like, okay, I'm going to go because of Tom Aspinall. He makes the division ubiquitous. He makes it fun between everyone. Everyone's going to want to see a heavyweight fight, because even if it's not Tom Aspinall, these two guys are going to fight, and the winner of this is going to go fight Tom Aspinall. He has the heavyweight division on a chokehold, and he could get it to a point where it revolves around him.
I agree. And even more so, I think just the excitement he brings, to harp on that, like you said, yeah, it gets people talking. The heavyweight division, again, like you said, is one of the divisions that we don't really talk about often, unless it is John Jones talk. And the way that we've been seeing this everywhere since this fight is incredible. And then also, not to mention that I see he's the first British heavyweight to ever win this title. So I think that's also going to bring in a whole nother crowd or a big fan base, because there isn't a lot of British fighters, really. You got like the Russians on lock, you got the Brazilians on lock, but to have a British fighter now being the interim heavyweight title holder, that just really shows he's going to be bringing in a new crowd. And I think he has a big fan base, and he just has a big personality, and that's what the UFC loves.
Yeah,
no, definitely. I mean, I think he is officially the third ever UK UFC champion in existence. First was Michael Bisping. Now we have Leon Edwards, finally, with Tom Aspinall now as the interim heavyweight champion. Just a real great moment for the night, and also kind of a wholesome moment where, you know, he put the belt on his father. It's just, you know, good vibes all around. But Tom Aspinall, definitely his night. Another person whose night was their night, to say, was Alex Pereira going into this main event. Wow, what a fight. The stakes were so high heading into this. Jiří Procházka coming off of an injury. This was his return fight. Alex Pereira beating Jan Błachowicz just only a couple months prior, getting scheduled for this light heavyweight title fight. Some huge stakes on the line going into this fight. And Alex Pereira proved that he is a UFC superstar. I mean, not even just UFC at this point. I think just a combat sports superstar. This guy is just a threatening finisher anywhere. He's fun out of the octagon too. His post-fight, pre-fight interviews, his personality is great. And he looked fantastic in this fight. His textbook left hook getting him the knockout win. There's some controversy in the end of whether Jiří Procházka was actually knocked out or not, up until Jiří himself said to the referee that, yeah, I actually was knocked out. So kind of put that whole controversy very quickly to bed.
Which I commend him for that too, because a lot of people easily would have been like, no, I wasn't, like, that was crazy, blah, 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 blah. Let me get back up.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, like, I think that Jiří Procházka saying that is just like, so I think he's like just through and through a fight fan. You know what I mean? Like, just the whole kind of combat sports mentality. He was like, yes, I was knocked out there. It's all good. Because most guys would probably say, like, oh, I wasn't knocked out, kind of do a Chael Sonnen thing, try to get another fight. But yeah, just very quickly, I want your guys' takes on this fight and what Alex Pereira did.
Oh, yeah. I see. Alex Pereira is my guy. The first time we recorded this podcast ever was the last fight with Izzy. We did like a prediction. And yeah. I love Alex Pereira. Everyone knows I hate Izzy. I don't even need to go down that rabbit hole. That's a little irrelevant now. But I still think during that saga that Izzy just got lucky. I mean, he won once out of a three-peat. I still think Alex Pereira should have been middleweight. Just he got lucky, whatever. Moving forward, he now becomes light heavyweight. And he remains light heavyweight. And I think that says a lot that he was able to make that jump so easily. And there's just everything I love about him. I do like his fighting style when he goes out there. I love seeing him go up against these guys in all these divisions. And I love his personality in and outside of the ring, too. I'm just a huge fan. And to see him on top and to see him do that here in New York at Madison Square Garden is super sick.
I mean, if there's a comparison for Alex Pereira in boxing, it's Bud Crawford, right? He's in the division, he goes undisputed. He moves up, and then he goes undisputed again. I believe when he first made his jump to light heavyweight, the first thing we all said was, he looks natural against Jan Blachowicz, won the fight. I don't want to hear anything about his record and how he only has like a few, like he's like, what, 10-2? Like he's only had like 12 fights or whatever, less than 15 fights in his career. This guy's a fighter, and he's just also like, shout out to Chris Carino, first of all, who called the fight under three. I thought it was definitely going to go the distance because even though these are two big guys, yeah, it's going to be a knockout. You could expect a knockout early. I thought it was going to be blood gory until the very, very end. And Pereira just dispatched of a guy who I thought was technically superior. And despite the fact that he was coming off an injury, I thought Jiří could get it done. But Pereira just dismantled him. And he's just a big guy. And he's this scary guy. It's like Michael Myers. He's just...
yeah.
He's just amazing. He's just awesome.
Yeah, yeah. No, also just to jump back in here really quick since I know our time is running out.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of you guys see Jiří's, what was it, his fight preparation, the craziness he was doing? He was like doing like one eye patch and all this nutty stuff. I already was going Alex Pereira, but then when I saw that, I was like, oh, he's totally losing. If you have to go all these lengths to beat this one guy, and Alex Pereira really was not doing the most. Like I think
he does that all the time, though.
Yeah. But still, it's like Alex Pereira is just casually training while he's doing that. It's like, okay, Alex Pereira is winning. I'm just saying. Anyways, you picked four, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I mean, that honestly, that was a bit worrying heading into this fight, but knowing how unpredictable Jiří is, I mean, like, I know if he won this fight, he would have went in the post-fight interview and said, like, oh, my eye training worked so well. That was the reason I won this fight, like, 100%. But anyway, though, I do kind of want to bring it back to just the place where this fight happened, MSG. Alex Pereira's home, I think now, is pretty much the Mecca. It's MSG. He is 3-0 at Madison Square Garden. His debut was at Madison Square Garden, got a knockout finish. His first title fight at middleweight against Israel Adesanya was at Madison Square Garden, won that, won the middleweight belt, and now finally wins the light heavyweight belt against Jiří Prochazka. I mean, this guy is just, he's so impressive, and especially at, yeah. I don't know what it is. I mean, it might be like a new mythical fighter type thing. Alex Pereira at Madison Square Garden, he's perfect. And actually, we do have a clip of him talking about what Madison Square Garden kind of means to him and just how it's been a home to some of the biggest moments in his career, which we'll play right now.
Madison Square Garden, I imagine, is a special place for you. You won in your debut, you became the middleweight champion, and now the light heavyweight champion inside this building. How special is it for you to return and make history again here?
O Madison Square Garden fez sua estreia aqui, foi campeão médio e agora meio pesado. O que significa para você fazer história nesse prédio?
Bom, significa muito para mim. É, pô, muitos artistas já passaram por aqui, lutadores, né, renomados. E, pô, eu tô aqui também fazendo história. Eu acho que, pô, daqui muitos anos, né, pessoas vão falar assim, pô, o Poatan lutou aqui, foi campeão. Vão falar da minha história, assim como as pessoas falam da história das pessoas mais que passaram por aqui. Então isso pra mim é especial, pô, num lugar especial, pô, num evento especial.
Well, this great arena right here, you know what I mean, be able to achieve what I achieved. This place had so many famous singers, actors, and like performers. And the same way that we talk about them, hopefully one day people are going to be talking about my achievements here too.
So yeah, coming out of that, I just kind of want your guys' general takes on the card overall. And just, you know, moving forward, what the light heavyweight division kind of means now with Alex Pereira kind of at the helm, steering the ship.
I mean, we just talked about how Tom Aspinall could cement himself as like the all eyes on me guy. I think Alex Pereira has cemented himself already as the All Eyes on Me guy. Just to make that big of a splash, especially in Madison Square Garden, as you said, Andrew, I mean, it's a very hard place to play and win. Just ask the New York Knicks. Very, very hard place to win. But yeah, I mean, to be perfect there with the line, where the lights shine the brightest, and in a new division, nonetheless, after dominating in the middleweight division, you come, you make this big of a splash, you already have the title. It's all eyes on Alex Pereira. It's his division to lose, really.
Yeah, I think just exactly what Mahdi said. There's only so much you can say here. And the way he jumped from division to division and took over that easily, and he's that captivating, I think he's just going to continue to captivate the UFC.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy. And I mean, he is at the pinnacle of the UFC already. So I think, you know, just keep doing what he's doing. And yeah, he can reign over this light heavyweight division for a while. But I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to watch the UFC Fight Night this weekend and our recap episode next week, breaking down all the results. It's Brendan Allen versus Paul Craig, so it should be a very, very fun fight. But before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my two fantastic co-hosts, Mahdi Dembele and Riley Lucas. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.